I'm sad. Ah, that's all I can say. It hurts too much to cry, as the Adlai Stevenson said. Okay, goodbye.
Oh, hold on. Brandon Weiss, where are you? That's Mickey. Mickey, can you come say hello to Mickey, please? Those are the only two that are here. The other ones are not here. So, all right. So I really wanted the cantor that I had as a child come and sing a Viva Malacano for us, but she had a commitment with something. So I just asked Jimmy if he would sing, play a song as we chat. So Jimmy's going to say something, I'm going to say something, and anyone can say anything they want, preferably about my mother. But I also know that sometimes there are some people here that go off on tangents, so let's try to keep it to a minimum. But feel free, and how are we doing? Dinner's going to be served?
It's ready.
So should people pick up and eat as they listen? I mean, it's not a formal thing. Okay, so people can get up and move around and pick up food. Okay, so Jimmy...
Maybe we can do one table at a time or something.
It's not sleepaway camp.
Well, just so there's not a mad rush, you know.
Okay. If there's a big, long line, guys, go back and sit down and wait your turn. Jim?
Okay.
There's two.
Oh, wow, my own.
So, like most mothers, you know, she could be a pain in the ass sometimes. But, and she could talk a little too much about herself sometimes. But she was a good person. She really cared about the less fortunate. You know, she'd go and just buy things for people. And she passed off that trait to her daughter, who's always doing the same thing. Though I was a huge disappointment for her, because I never went to medical school. Until only just a few years ago, she was still saying, "You know, Jimmy, it's not too late to go to medical school." And I'd say, "Mom, I'm 55. I think it's a little too late." "But you'd make such a nice doctor." I accused her of just wanting to be able to utter the phrase, "My son, the doctor." But, you know, I don't like all that blood stuff and memorizing all those words. So she said I was wasting my intelligence by not curing some diseases. But I don't know. What can I do? I am who I am there. I thought I'd bring you up to date on a few things, since most of you haven't seen her in the last year and a half since she moved to San Diego. You know, her dementia was getting worse. So one of the times before that, I took her to Japan in October of 2019. I knew it would probably be our last trip because she was getting pretty bad. We got to Japan and we're walking around and everything, and she says, "Is this the only country called Japan?" And I said, "Yeah, why?" She says, "I could have sworn there was another one also called Japan." "No, Mom, this is the only one called Japan." I took her to a Burmese lunch because she always loved the Burmese food. The last time we were in Japan, I had asked her where she wanted to go back to for her birthday, because we happened to be there on her birthday. And she said, "I want to go back to that Burmese restaurant." So this time I took her to a different Burmese restaurant. And she liked it so much, she said, "If I live to 90, do you promise to bring me back here?" Aw. I didn't promise, because I knew even if she lived to 90, she probably wouldn't be in shape to do it. But that was so nice. And then I took her to the Panasonic showroom. She wanted to go. She'd read about it, where you can see all the different Panasonic products. And a woman, young Japanese woman, comes up to us and says, "Do you have any questions on any of the products? I can help you, you know, any questions?" And my mom starts lecturing her. She says, "Make sure you don't get married too young. And never let a man tell you what to do." That was my mother. Before she moved out, I was sleeping in the guest room at her place here in L.A., and she came in one morning at like 6:30 in the morning, and it woke me up when she walked in, but she didn't know I was awake, and she saw me lying there, and she says, "My little boy is sleeping. I love him." Oh, so sweet. And then soon after we moved her down to San Diego, I took her to this home goods store. And we're walking around the store. And she turns to me. Sometimes she knew who I was, and sometimes she wasn't sure. So she turns to me. She says, "Where is your mother?" I said, You're my mother. She gets this big smile on her face. Oh, that's why I've been seeing so much of you. And then every single person we passed in the store after that, she stops and she says, this is my baby. This is my baby. And when I'd come in to visit her at her place sometimes, when she knew who I was, she'd stop and everyone in the room and say, excuse me, everyone, everyone, it's my baby boy. So we placed an obit in the LA Times last week, and it was kind of weird to see her on that page because that was her favorite page. The first page she would read every morning in the newspaper was that page, and she'd always call me up, did you see who died? So it was really weird to see her on that page, but thanks.
Jimmy.
Okay.
So anyone else who wants to tell any stories or anything?
Okay. You want
to? Hello. Hello. I am Phyllis's grandson, Brandon. I have, I'll keep this short. I have one story that sticks out in my mind. It's the last lucid memory, I think, that, the last memory that her and I have together where she was completely with it. We were in New York City, and I took her to Saks Fifth Avenue. And it's a 10-story building. We went to the very top floor. I said, Nana, I work for this company. I will buy you anything you want. She goes, okay. We start on the top floor. She touches the shoes. Oh, this is nice. Oh, this is nice. This is nice. This is nice. I'm like, yeah, would you want any? No. We keep going down and down, and for about 2 hours, every floor we got to, she said, this is nice. And it was really sweet, and it was a great memory, and it was only until I bought her a chocolate croissant that I started to get nervous because she was eating it as we were walking. And then we got to the very fancy floor where, you know, covered in chocolate, she would be like, oh, this is... And I'd have to slap her hand, be like, just don't touch. And she gave me a lovely hug at the end of it, and she said this was such a lovely afternoon. And she was such a lovely person, and I know everyone here will miss her deeply, and I miss her as well. And, you know, I'm sure I speak for my mom, Jimmy, and the entire family and friends. Thank you so much for coming. And if there was anyone who would like to say anything else...
Okay.
Stand up. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon Weiss. It's so much easier to be funny than to feel anything. It's so much easier to tell a story than to think about really how you're processing any type of emotion. But I do have a few funny stories because they really did exist. And of course, we're sharing them with you because everyone knew how Phyllis could be. And it's funny when Brandon was just talking about going into Saks. And the last time we went shopping with my mother, I thought of you, Lenny, as my mother pulled out what resembled what a very large opera singer would be wearing. Sequins and pearls and massive, and she held it up and she says, this is what I want. And I said, no way. No way. She picked the next thing out. It was an oversized DKNY sweatshirt with bright gold letters. And she said, please, can I have this? And I said, yes. It became her favorite sweatshirt. So my mom, you know, at funerals you talk about the legacy, and we know how her strength and her intellect sometimes got her in trouble. She meant well, and I know she changed a lot of people's lives. I can promise you that. You know, at the end, she really helped a lot of women deal with their own sexual assault and wanting to be heard herself. And those were really important things to her. And she was a great mother. But none of that holds to those three little boys that call her Nana. And that was pretty cool. And when she was getting, when she was declining, I became the strong one. Easier to be funny. But I never knew in the coming, you know, 14, 15 months that I could love a mother, my mother, as much as I could love her. It's indescribable. I'm not a touchy-feely person, even though some of you might think I am. I'm not. And I would crawl into her bed in the dirty hospital. It was disgusting. And I didn't cringe because I just wanted to love my mom. And I really, really did. We, you know, a lot of us have older parents and have experienced trying to figure out how to have the conversation about moving them somewhere else. And my mother was very clear. She stood up in the middle of her living room with her hands on her hips. If you think I'm ever going to let you move anywhere to live with those kinds of people. Well, I felt like I was cheating on her because I was in the back room calling different places, assisted living, insisting that they understand my needs and that she had to be with someone that was intellectual. She had to be someone that was fond of architecture. They had to have academia background. And I really, really believe that. Oh, we have this, we have that. The first day she got there, we were in the lobby, and she was, "I've been here before," she said. "It looks like, you know, one of those fancy suburban something or another." And I was so afraid that she was going to go, "Oh my God, like, what is this?" I thought maybe it would look like a Ritz-Carlton or something, but I knew she wouldn't like that either. And we were waiting for her room, and she was tired. It was a long day, and I had driven down there and stopped three times at three different Starbucks because I needed to take a breath. And I would go buy another coffee. I'd go in the bathroom. I'd look in the mirror, and then I would continue on. I wonder if she was looking in the same mirror as I was, who she would see. It's hard. It's hard. But I got to tell you one last story that's funny. So before she left, she called me. I called her, and the phone rang, and she picked it up, and she said, "Hello." I said, "Ma?" She said, "I'll call you back. Michelle's here." I said, "Who?" She said, "I can't call. I can't talk." She hangs up. I called Jimmy. I said, "Who's Michelle?" And he said, "Probably someone that moved in." For the next two nights, I would call her, and again, it was Michelle. And Jimmy would say, "Well, she really wants to meet Michelle's husband, apparently." And I said, "I bet she does, whoever Michelle is." And so finally, the night came where Michelle's husband came to watch the election. I don't know what the election is. I don't know. And she called me. She said, "I met Michelle's husband." "Oh, is he something else?" she said. "I really love him. She's really smart, too. I like her." I told him that I was one of those people that knocked on the doors in New Hampshire when he was running for president of the United States. So even through all her stuff, her politics all stayed the same.
Jane, would you like to talk?
She was the most wonderful friend I ever had. She was beautiful. She wore wonderful clothes. She was humble because she could have shopped at Saks Fifth Avenue, but she loved Ross. She loved bargains. She always told me the bargains that she got. she put her money where her mouth was. I could always trust her. When my husband was very sick for 7 years, she was the only one who continued to come and visit him. And she and I met in 1958, I think it was, when our husbands were both studying for the bar exam in L.A. at the law library. And the first time we met, she came to the apartment where I was living, and we were supposed to be going to SeaWorld. SeaWorld. I didn't know what SeaWorld was, but she knew because she lived with Bryna, her sister, who had lived here for so many years. And I got all dressed up. I remember the dress. I was a shark skin dress with big patent leather buttons. And I opened the door, and she looks at me. She never said hello. She said, "Where do you think you're going?" And she had Bermuda shorts on. She said, go change. And, of course, I did. And that was the beginning of a fabulous friendship. I just adored her. She was the life of the party. We used to go out for lunch very often, and usually there were three-hour lunches. And when our kids were babies and they were down for naps, we would call each other and be on the phone the entire time. And Jimmy and Liz, my daughter Liz, were both wonderful nappers. And and so we would talk for 3 hours. We never ran out of things to say. When she taught and she was substituting, she started in the neighborhood. And she said she wasn't happy. And she went to the inner city. And she was so happy with those children. And she bought shoes and she bought socks and she bought a girl a quinceañera dress. She just loved those kids, and I'm sure they loved her. She was so bright, and she could bring so much to them and enrich them so much. And she was very generous, and I miss her, and I love her, and I was so happy when I went to visit her, and she saw me, and she said, "Jane Cohen." And she remembered me. And that was my last memory of her.
Does anyone want to eat? Can someone be the person that can, so that we can follow the herd, like at Disneyland?
I don't know if this is still on. Yeah, hi, I'm Roxanne Steinberg, and I don't have any stories, but following you, just how much she meant to our lives. But the story that keeps coming back, not really a story, but just the wonderful thing that she did, was at Zenji's bar mitzvah, she said, "Do you want me to cook anything for you?" And so she cooked a huge pot. I must have been 50 pounds of chili for Zenji. It was unbelievable. And she did it Zenji had a bar mitzvah in a cornfield. And so she's like, "I just need a little help getting the chili from the car into the where we served the food." It was unbelievable. She loved my sons. I don't think my husband and I could be where we are as dancers today if we didn't have the help and support of Phyllis and Barbara too. Phyllis and Barbara helped us write every single grant that we applied for. I'm not mentioning my mother and father, who my mother always said, It's great. It's fine. And then Dad would say, what does this mean? And then I'd have to call Phyllis and Barbara to say, okay, can you put your... And it took years for me to learn how to write, but Phyllis was just tremendously instrumental in helping us for many, many years. And she became a board member for us. And that was, you know, just wonderful to have her be part of our thinking for all of our work. She came and did... conferences with me at difficult times when I couldn't get anybody else. She came and we shared a room just after my son Caden was born, and she came and sat with me at the conference hall, bitching about things. That was wonderful. And I think one conference that she went to, she sprained her ankle on, but she kept going and kept helping us. And trying to think of other stories. One thing that keeps coming to mind also is that for, I'd say, about the last 4 years, every time I'd see her, she just would look at me and she'd say, I love you. I love you. She didn't have, you know, more words that she could access easily, but that was right there, and it was mutual. She was very, very dear to us, and I miss her. Miss her a lot. So, I know I have more. Maybe I'll come back. But this is just gorgeous, Kathy. Thank you so much for putting it together, and thank you, Melissa and Terry and Mark and Dee Dee. It's so beautiful to be here. I can't think of a better place. And Kathy, thank you for the photographs and the Jimmy. The that's just great. The loop of her phone messages. She always talked about Kathy and Jimmy. I know so many stories. I know so much about you two.
But I wonder how much was all true.
I'm sure it's all true. I'm sure it's all true. It's all good. It's all good. Believe me. So. Yeah. Oh, and thank you guys. Beautiful speaking, both of you. Jimmy, you have another career, I think, besides a doctor. MC. All right.
I just want to acknowledge when I opened the LA Times, which we do every morning because our mother loves to read it, and saw her face on the front page of the LA Times, I just thought, oh, that was like a culmination of, for me, of who she was. She was such a rebel and an inspiration for me. We both became teachers late in our life, and she was a true revolutionary. And to have her have that moment of glory after so many years was really profound. And I think it was a difficult time when she had to go through that. And then to finally, years later, come out and be a spokesperson for a really contemporary cause was probably a milestone for her, I think, of who she really was. And I always look at her as an inspiration and sort of a role model, because she was who she was with no apologies, and had to repress it at a time where it must have been difficult for her. And then to come out late in her life and have that moment, I was really grateful. I just see that picture of her on the front of the LA Times. Who gets that? When does that happen? So, yeah, I really miss her. She was a cornerstone at all our Christmas parties. She would always bring her, I thought we should have it, her favorite rice, wild rice, and it was so good. And one year she even brought like a bacon pie, some weird, remember that bacon pie? But, yeah, she always brought something, and got to know a lot of our friends, which we're really grateful for. So we're so happy to have hosted this for her. She sort of lives in our house, the spirit of her, always.
Yeah, I did want to say one, which was, you know, she was so, that anger of what happened to her was so much in her. And I almost feel like when she let that out, that was just almost too much for her. It was so much. It was so powerful that she did that. And also, if anybody has her chili recipe. Yes. Because I wrote it down, but I lost it.
I have her chocolate cake recipe.
Oh, I'll take any recipe.
Or the blintzes.
The blintzes. Okay.
The thing in the blintzes.
Oh, my God, the blintzes. Yeah.
Yeah. Cookbook.
Hello. My name is David Goldberg. I met Phyllis probably shortly after I moved to L.A. from New York. I've been here a dozen years now. And, you know, she showed me, and we went to lunch very often, and she would take me all over town to nice restaurants. I would have never gotten to Musso and Frank without her. And little pupusa joints. And what else? The Watts Towers. And then she showed me the school she worked in. But we would go out, I don't know, a couple times a month at least. And she talked and she regaled me with all the stories that you know. The stories of when she was in the business, and when she was the teacher, she told me several times about the incident that everybody knows about, without mentioning a name, and I didn't find out about that until it came out. And and she regaled me around all her relatives and friends. So I know all your kids. All about them as they grew up, and you and Jimmy, and probably a lot of people who were sitting here. And if you tell me your name, I probably will remember one of those stories. Anyhow, I am so grateful to have known her.
Well, since David handed the microphone over to me, there's so many stories having to do with my life with Phyllis. It's just, in fact, our mutual friend Gail Staden, when I was living in New York, I had a radio program called The Mellow Child. And Phyllis had just started working at KTTV, right? And she needed an authority on children's toys. Now, who am I? I had this radio program about children, but I knew nothing about toys. Anyway, she called me up. She brought me out to Los Angeles. She picked me up at the airport. She brought me to her house. We talked about toys and whatnot. And she said, well, you may as well stay overnight, you know. And that was the beginning of, I don't know, 40 years, 45 years of friendship. And Phyllis and I, she loved to travel, not only with Jimmy, but I mean, the best with Jimmy. But if I had a piece being performed somewhere like Alaska, she came to Alaska. And we had the best time. We had the best, absolute best time. And you could never be without conversation with Phyllis, because she was never without conversation. And toward the end of our lives together, she would call me every day and say, I just want to know that you're okay. Are you okay? I'm going to call you every day. And she did, for as long as she could. And I will miss her till the end of my days. Next.
I'm here. Okay. Hi. No reason to cry. I am Daphne. Oh, thank you. I was a Phyllis caregiver. I worked with her almost 2 years. Like everyone said here, you know, she always had a story. She always had something good to say about everything, about her kids. You know, she loves Kathy and Jimmy so much. And one thing that I learned from her is that family is first, no matter what, no matter who. And yes, she changed my life in too many ways. I learned a lot from her. And, you know, I know, like Kathy said, that she changed too many people's lives with the way she used to be, the way she used to talk, and yes, the way she used to be happy all the time. You know, you never hear from her, you know, crying or, you know, complaining about something. It was always something good. Good. So I will miss her. Thank you.
I just want to say, for those of us that were raised as daughters, no offense to you men, you know, the mothers all were like, why can't you be like the Steinberg girls? Why can't you be perfect? And at 58 years old, it was, why can't you be like Daphne? Why can't you be like Daphne? Daphne was the perfect. She's still the perfect person. Loving. She loved my mother unconditionally. And she made our lives a lot easier. And I didn't feel guilty for that because I know how much she really loved her. And so thank you. No, thank you. Oh, and Auntie Gail wants to say something.
I don't know why or how, but I've always been Auntie Gail. So, there you go. Did everybody hear what I said?
No.
Okay.
Say it again.
Say it again?
Yeah.
Well, what I said was, I don't know why or how, but I've always been Auntie Gail. Never just Gail. I just want to say a few words. I was married to Martin Staden, and Lenny, of course, was married to Bob Steinberg, and Phyllis was married to Jason, and we were part of, I don't know how many married couples, and I was the first one to meander or to say to Martin, I want to be separated. And it was very difficult to do that. And I would say within 2 weeks of me separating, Phyllis separated from Jason, and we really became a twosome. We became the gay divorcees. We could be seen in restaurants flirting with men. Oh, my God, we had the best time. And about this time, I was dating a man in New York named Irwin, who I met through Adrian, sitting over there. And Irwin would end up calling me and saying, oh, my God, I'm with my son. It's not easy. It's difficult. What are you doing? And I would say, well, I'm with my daughters. You know, this is not easy. And, of course, I was with Phyllis, sitting in restaurants, flirting with men, having the absolute best time. I adored her. And then Adrian joined us, and we did become a threesome. We would go to skiing together, and we would go to the Palm Springs together. And anyway, I just wanted to speak and say I loved Phyllis. And I can also say there was a time when Phyllis first started drinking, and I would get a call in the middle of the night that she had been stopped, and she needed to call somebody, and she always called me, and I always came to get her in the middle of the night, always.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sweetheart, and I loved her so much, and I love you and Jimmy and all her friends. Thank you for all coming today.
And thank you for your colored description of your relationship. I do have to say that there was one thing that changed dramatically when from the time Mommy moved. We never heard Jason's name again. She had no idea who he was, no matter what we said. It was really bizarre, and Jimmy and I were so relieved. It was the first time, first day, second day, third day. Never heard his name again. It was great. You know, because she was so kind with her words about him. And people don't have to continue to talk. They can just eat, really. Food. I'll put it here until somebody wants something.
Does this work?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Laurie. I'm Cousin Laurie. I met Phyllis in 1991 when I showed up on her doorstep, and she had never met me before in her life. And she's my father's cousin, and I had said to my dad, I'd moved out here. I knew no one. And I said, don't you have some cousins out here? So he sent me to Bryna, Phyllis's sister, who sent me straight to Phyllis, and she took me in. I mean, she just took me in, and the thing, and we were friends ever since, close friends. And the one thing I just wanted to share was that she taught me something that no one had taught me before, and I was 30 years old. She taught me how to say, I love you, because she was so generous with her I love yous, and nobody was where I grew up. I grew up on the East Coast. I don't know if it was that or if it was my family or what, but we never said I love you, but she said it all the time, and after a certain amount of time, you had to say it too. So she taught me how to say I love you, which is a pretty big deal, and I will miss her forever.
You know, all we can do about our own deaths is laugh about it, right? So I have a little clip of my mom. I interviewed her. You know, NPR, they would say, you know, the day after Thanksgiving, get a microphone and interview your relatives while they're still here. So I did that one year in 2008. And she was cooking a Moroccan tagine. And so I have like 25 minutes of audio, but this is just one little clip where she's talking about how a few years earlier, my sister had asked her to write down all her recipes. And she said, and I want it in your own handwriting. So my mother actually sat down and did it. And this is her talking about how she actually did do that. That's it.
I made for Kathy that she wanted written in my own hand so that when I died, she would know what was mine, that she would actually have something written in my handwriting. I refer to it. I mean, it's like good to her that I actually sat down and wrote those things. Although today I'd put it on the computer.
Computer.
Call me. Bye. Hey, honey, it's Mom. I'm trying to figure out Gori sent me something to read, and it's so small I can't read it, and yet I tried my usual, and it didn't work. All right, call me when you have a chance. Bye.
Just a note to those who are leaving, we are having dessert, so you may want to stay for dessert. We've got some cakes, we've got some churros.
Let me know, bye.
The more people that leave, the more for us.
The latest LAUSD. I got to get out. Talk to you later. Bye. Oh, Fairfax. Anyway, let me know.
One of my mom's cakes that she used to cake was the bake was the flourless chocolate cakes. We picked up a few of those.
You wake up. Bye-bye.
And we've got some other cakes too, in addition to the
book club came.
In addition to the churros.
And I made this glorious bread pudding with chocolate chips, which I have a piece of in my freezer since. And look at my belly. I ate mine and all off the plates, of course. Oh, she's such a moron.